It is Tuesday, February 24th, 2014, and this is episode 56 of the Defensive Security Podcast. My name is Jerry Bell, and as usual, tonight I am joined by Mr. Andrew Kellett.
Hey, good evening, Jerry. How are you tonight?
I'm doing very well. Thank you. How about you?
Doing great. Doing great. For a Monday not being at RSA.
I know. That's two of us.
Right, we're the only security people not at RSA.
I know. That's what I've heard. That's what Twitter tells me.
It's true. We are uncool.
Oh, well.
But every time I've gone to RSA, I've had to work a booth. So you know what? If that's the only way I get to go, I don't want to go.
It is tough being a booth babe, I have to imagine.
Not fun. It's not fun.
All right. Well, as usual, the thoughts and opinions we express do not represent our employer's views.
Past,
keep that in mind.
Or future.
Or past, present, or future. Thank you.
Perhaps in an alternate reality, maybe.
Not even then for me.
All right, fair enough.
Well, so my good friend Bob gave me a call from Sochi before he left, and he wanted to remind everyone that it really doesn't matter how long your passwords are. If someone compromises your server, they can still get your password.
It's true.
Mimikatz is a wonderful thing. We talked about that a couple of times ago, but Bob had another run-in with that, and it is quite a nasty tool.
How do you do in the snowcross, by the way, in Sochi?
I haven't talked to him about that. I don't know.
Oh, well, he is the world's most interesting InfoSec professional.
I did hear that there is no truth to the rumor he had anything to do with that one star that didn't open.
Good to know. Good to know.
Yep.
So totally unrelated. Server gets popped, you still lose your password. But I thought passwords were one-way encrypted, Jerry.
Well, they are when they're stored, but not when they're in memory.
Oh.
If you want to find something really interesting, go Google Mimikatz, Mimikatz. Actually, there was just a new version released not too long ago that added support to harvest two-factor access card pins, which is quite handy.
Yeah.
So.
Interesting.
Yeah, it's a nice little piece of malware.
I'm afraid if I Google that, I would get some weird Japanese fetish site, though.
That's the second search result, yeah.
Oh, gotcha. Good to know. Good to know.
All right. We have a spate of stories for you tonight. So we'll jump in. The first we have is from Network World. I think just about everything tonight is from Network World because that's what Andy reads, apparently.
It's not true. It's just, they're in my RSS feed a lot.
And they write a lot of stuff, too. But the first one we have tonight is titled, "The White House Pushes Cybersecurity Framework for Critical Infrastructure." It is a 41-page document. I'm not going to go through the painful, excruciating detail, but I'll tell you, I have spent some quality time with this document as it was being created. And, I'm not saying that it's totally worthless. But as it exists right now, it isn't very helpful, in particular for the purpose of protecting critical infrastructure. It really is just a very high-level, fluffy, non-committal, flexible, I would say flexible to a fault, risk management methodology that points you to other industry standards. So... yeah, that's my hate and on for that thing. Now, hopefully, at some point, it'll get better and quite likely we'll see some industry verticals making mandates on different aspects of it. And at that point, it could change pretty dramatically. But for now, no, I'm not so impressed.
I just want to say, when I think about people I trust around computer security, the government comes to mind very quickly.
Well, you know what's interesting about this thing is, it was very, very heavily influenced by the private sector.
Yeah,
and you know that's a good and a bad thing, right? Because on the one hand, you like you said, you necessarily don't have overdue influence by the government, but on the other hand, you know you've got the amalgamation of companies who don't want any, you know, new obligations thrust upon them. And then you got the other ones who are trying to sell some crap by sticking it into the, you know, to a government document.
Yep. Yeah, I don't know. I looked over it. I mean, there's some interesting stuff if you're, you know, just getting started and you've never read any of this kind of stuff before. But, yeah, and surely we need another framework. That's what we need.
Well,
that's the problem.
I think you hit on the really valuable point. If you don't have anything, it's not a bad thing, right? But if you've already got something going, it's not that useful. All right. Moving on. Next, also from Network World, IT innovation challenges security pros, knowledge, and resources.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think anybody who lives in the world of security knows this story painfully well. You know, 4 out of 5, according to the survey referenced in here, which I think is from TrustWave, 4 out of 5 IT pros they surveyed had reported being pressured to deploy inadequately secured software. And what the other thing I thought was a little interesting was that over half of the CIOs, CISOs, and IT directors said the pressure to do that came from the C-level or owner or board of director level.
This is the old fight between doing business, being agile, and getting things done quickly, and trying to have some level of risk mitigation and control around it. And I think we're losing that fight right now.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, again, it's not necessarily always wrong, right?
Right. Every company takes risks. They choose to take risks. But I think what this article is stressing is that we might be getting a little behind the power curve, you know, especially when I start thinking about things like software-defined networks, which are on the horizon. And I had a conversation recently with a customer who wanted the software-defined networking to be able to automatically configure the firewall as well, which tells me that they feel making firewalls takes too long and they want that to be more of a flexible and agile. But the whole point of a firewall is to be a control point to sanity check this stuff, amongst other things. So it's really interesting when people are pushing to have security devices automatically reconfigure through some of this stuff. You know, cloud computing is another one, especially when it's completely outside the domain of the local IT infrastructure. Things can get spun up without IT even knowing about it. A lot of VMware self-service going on, and of course, BYOD, which is, you know, lots of buzzwords. But all these things are making it, I think, really difficult to wrap security around the stuff that's going. So I'm not surprised by this. The only advice I can have is we got to get better at explaining risk and making sure that the executives are pushing for this stuff understand the consequence of what they're pushing for so that when stuff does break, they're warned.
Well, and I would also say trying to be somewhat creative in ways to facilitate what would otherwise be risky stuff. You know,
yeah.
If you can wrap some architecture around it or create some kind of an environment where you're able to rapidly plug in things that are, you know, risky or untrustworthy. And by the way, I would throw firewalls into that risky bucket. That's one thing I've learned over the years.
Any security tool badly used can be risky. No, you're absolutely correct. And I should have said that too. We can't be the no department. We can't be the business prevention department. We've got to be the yes, but here's a better way to do it department as best we can.
Exactly.
Otherwise, we'll definitely get shut out of the conversation.
Absolutely. All right. Well, Moving on, we have a update to the Target breach, and this is a week behind because last week we did a first-of-a-kind special episode.
That's true.
So this is, a follow-on to the Target breach. We know from past that the method of entry into the Target network was through a mechanical contractor named Fazio Mechanical. And the new news here is that they...
It's not that new. It's a week old. Everybody knows this.
Well, new since we talked about it last. How about?
I'm just teasing.
Is that Fazio was... I want to say Fozzie.
Fozzie Bear.
Fozzie Bear. Anyhow. Wow, where'd that come from? They were breached with an email, and it gets worse, right? Now, I think just about every company has just a litany of problems with email-borne malware and whatnot. But, this company, apparently their malware antivirus solution was Malwarebytes and not the pro one, not the commercial version, the free one for home use, which doesn't have real-time protection. And, what concerns me about that, and, I'm a big detractor of malware, or of antivirus, right? In that it isn't really effective, right? Because you could make the argument that, hey, even if they had antivirus, what's the likelihood it would have been caught? I don't know. Mm-hmm. Right? But, here you got a situation where essentially they apparently weren't running into any antivirus in a proactive manner. So the way I have envisioned this organization is that, when their computers get slow or they get pop-ups, some IT consultant they have on retainer comes around and runs Malwarebytes.
Yep.
Which, it's a mechanical contractor. They're not in the IT business,
So the lesson learned for me on this is a couple here, right? Most likely, and we were talking about this off the air, Target probably sent them a questionnaire of what's your InfoSec like? And having sent out and also filled out hundreds of those things, I can tell you people sometimes stretch the tooth a little bit and they, check some boxes they shouldn't be checking. I can assure you Target didn't walk in there and actually do an actual audit. So Target placed a lot of trust in this connection with this vendor, and they do with all their vendors. And I think the lesson learned for me is consider these connections hostile and figure out a way to limit their access as best you can.
Yeah, that is really, really important. And I think you hit on a very subtle but complex problem is that I would imagine Target, and I have no insight into Target, right? But I have seen lots of other large organizations, vendor management programs, and a lot of times they set the amount of oversight and whatnot based on the importance of that, that vendor, right? And I can imagine Fazio not being all that strategic of a vendor, right? And so from their perspective, does it make lots of sense to spend, dozens or hundreds of man hours trying to vet the security controls of a company who is going to be installing, essentially heating and cooling units in their stores? They don't do IT service for them. And I think the error or flawed thinking there is that there wasn't a risk to Target by virtue of that company having a connection into their vendor portal.
Yeah, I think you're right. And I think, to be clear, it's not worth 100 hours or hundreds of hours of man hours to go do a full audit. You've got to have another proactive mechanism that is defaulting to hostile, that's passive in its defenses somehow, some way. Whether that be a really well isolated environment, whether it be something, right? And every connection is different here, right? So you've got to look at what they're trying to connect to. you know, maybe it's a jump host, maybe it's a Bastion server, maybe it's, I don't know, but the way they're doing this, it's going to bite other people. I know other people are set up this way.
Yeah, there was some, in Brian Krebs' article, there was some speculation and whatnot from former employees of Target that the server or the application that the vendors interface with is called Ariba. And I've actually run an Ariba instance in a former life as well. So I know it's a pretty popular application for that kind of thing. And it was apparently, or allegedly, I should say, on an Active Directory domain. So it's not hard to think that if someone were able to kind of get in the back door, my experience is that a lot of these applications tend not to get patched because they're often very customized. Uh-huh. And so they're often very, you know, very full of holes. But a lot of times that's considered okay because, hey, it's not accessible to the internet. It's only accessible to partners who, you know, we've vetted and, you know, and there you go. And like you said, you've got to assume that everybody coming in is a potential adversary and act accordingly. And by the way, I not to plug for myself too much, but I wrote a couple of articles about this whole vendor management thing, and you know, you should go read them. They're on malicious.link.com. There you go.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. We need a sound for a self plug alert.
Attention whore.
Yeah, you know, and one of these days we'll have to get into a debate about the pros and cons of AD in a security environment.
Yes. Yeah, well, we're going to talk more about that in a little bit.
All right.
So, all right, moving on. Next story we have is titled Healthcare Organizations Under Siege from Cyber Attacks, study says.
So I envision Catapult outside just launching cyber.
What does cyber look like? Is it gooey?
I think it's like the Matrix.
Oh, okay.
Green numbers green and characters stuff falling down the screen.
So they report in this study that from September 2012 to October 2013, 375 healthcare organizations in the U.S. had been compromised and in many cases were still compromised because they had not yet detected the attacks. And that kind of begs the question, if the people writing the report know they were compromised, did they tell those organizations? I don't know. Maybe I'm overthinking that. I don't know. But, you know, I think this kind of goes back to the whole discussion we're having with Fazio. And, you know, these are healthcare companies. They're not IT companies. But, man, healthcare companies in particular have a lot to lose if they do this stuff wrong.
You know, we've been skeptical of these sorts of studies before. This was conducted by Norris, who is a cybersecurity firm. God, I hate using that term. And SANS, well-respected research institute and training institute. But I buy it. Every healthcare organization that I've dealt with struggled greatly with security issues. That vertical as a part of the market is just really, really rife with problems. And I think it's going to get worse. I think it's gonna, especially with the, you know, more HIPAA enforcement coming, that sort of stuff. You know, if you're in healthcare, buckle up. It's going to get ugly.
You know, what I find interesting, and this is just a real small diversion, is the really significant difference we have between healthcare data and other kinds of data. And I think we've talked about this before, but you know, it is interesting that we take from a legal and legislative and penalty perspective, healthcare data breaches much more seriously than we do almost anything else. So
that's true.
Maybe if there's a HIPAA for credit cards, I don't know.
Fine idea. Let's start that.
Yeah. No.
But you know, from a lessons learned standpoint, it's all the basic stuff. They're just not getting the basic hygiene right because of their environment. And a part of it is a lot of embedded systems that aren't embedded systems, that are never patched, that are never updated, that are they're not treated like traditional IT resources.
Right. They're black boxes.
Yeah, but they're running XP.
Right.
You know, amongst other things. And it's an interesting world that you know, I think is going to need some more help than has been given lately.
Yeah, definitely. So, you know, if you are in the healthcare business, you are under siege.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. All right, next story. This is awesome. It's not really a story. It is a document put out by the Defense Signals Directorate, which is a division of the, I guess it's the Australian version of the NSA.
That makes it okay because it's not the U.S. version.
That's true. That's true. Although I've heard there's lots of shenanigans coming from them too.
What? So. They have kangaroos. How could they be bad?
Fair enough. And koalas.
And koalas.
Yeah. And koalas look cuddly.
They do. Kangaroos look cuddly.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true.
I mean, koalas are more cuddly. But either way, how could they be bad?
That's true. Well, without passing judgment, they actually put out some really good stuff. And this is another example. So this document is called Strategies to Mitigate Targeted Cyber, I know you love that word, intrusions. And the meat of the document is a rank ordered list of protections or precautions or mitigations from 1 to 35. And I thought what was really cool was not only the order, but also that they gave what I would say are some subjective definitions of each one, right? So So they tell you how effective overall each one is, what the user experience impact is, what the upfront cost is, what the maintenance cost is. And these are high, medium, low kinds of answers, right? Where in the kill chain? I hate that word. I hate that phrase.
Don't like kill chain?
I don't like kill chain.
All right.
Anyway, it's my cyber. Kill chain, just, I don't know. Anyhow, kind of maps to where in the kill chain each of these controls are. I thought what was really interesting was the top four. Number one was application whitelisting.
Yep.
Number two was application patching. Number three was operating system patching. And number four was restricting administrative privileges.
Couldn't agree more. All excellent.
Yeah, absolutely.
Now, and I completely agree with you too on the, what I love about this, like you mentioned, is they have things like the upfront cost, high, medium, low, maintenance cost, user resistance. I disagree with them on a couple of the user resistance items, but I think researching admin rights is going to be high user resistance, not medium as they have it tagged here. But this is good.
They put their lives upside down. What, you know, it's just different.
I don't think that's how that works.
Oh. Anyhow.
Yeah. But, you know, I don't want to burst your bubble.
Yeah.
I'll send you a koala. Anyway, good stuff. And, you know, it gets into much more esoteric sort of things like, you know, like randomly 20 block spoofed emails, 21 workstation and server configuration management. Well, yeah. 22, antivirus software using heuristics and automated internet-based reputation rating. So you have to get down to number 22 before they mention antivirus software. I love that.
Number 33 out of 35. Network IPS.
Wow.
Ouch. Oh, how far they have fallen.
But anyway, anyhow, it's good stuff.
It is an excellent find, and I commend you for finding this.
I'm here to help.
Good deal. All right, moving on. Next, we have 6 tips to combat APT from Network World. And I feel like we need a drum roll. Number one, big data for analysis and detection.
Easier said than done.
But it's big data.
Are we playing buzzword bingo while we're reading this?
It's just big data. Yeah, absolutely.
And which vendors, you know, spiffed Network World to write this?
Well, I'm sure if you read the details, you could catch that. But.
Okay, but yes, I agree. Use data analysis, which goes back to monitoring, capturing, all that sort of jazz.
Yeah, and that's actually the point they raise here is that you've really got to start focusing away from solely prevention and really getting into the detection.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's just an important thing. Number two, share info with the right people. You know, everybody talks about this and it's such a great idea, but you know, I would love to know who's doing this and who it's working for.
This is like the social equivalent of signature-based AV.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a good idea. But, and I suppose if, you know, if you're Lockheed Martin and Boeing says, hey, by the way, we got, you know, this group trying to break in and steal our airplane, you know, design. Well, that might be interesting to you.
Yeah.
But, you know, otherwise it's, I think that's a tough nut.
All right. You know what I would do instead of number two? Personally, I would say keep abreast of activity and common attack profiles.
There you go. Yep.
Which in essence does the same thing, right? You're staying informed as to what the bad guys are up to.
Right.
That's just me though.
Ooh, number three is my favorite word, understand the kill chain.
We'll come up with a new phrase for you, like, you've been pwned links.
the life cycle in a pwnage.
You done failed at InfoSec thingy.
So I actually think this, I mean, despite my hatred for the phrase, I think it makes a lot of sense to well understand how these attacks work. Because one thing I've learned from studying a lot of these really complicated and high-profile breaches is they all work almost the same. I mean, some of the entry points and exit points are different, but at its core, they are almost all the same. The way they get in, the way they move around, and the way they get at the data and then get out. So I think it's a good idea. I just wish they would call it something else.
Fair enough.
Number four, look for indicators of compromise. So I guess you have to have a source for indicators of compromise. And I know there's lots of vendors now in this market space offering threat intelligence, which essentially is indicators of compromise. And, you know, that's not a bad idea. But, yeah, there you have it. Number five, test your network. Can't disagree with that, you know.
Yeah.
I'm a big proponent of pen testing.
Yeah, we're going to talk about that coming up soon, too, on our later story here.
Indeed.
Hey, and let me just say, going beyond pen testing, right? You know, you want to do full red team simulations. You want to do malware simulations, you know, phishing simulations, many more things other than just, you know, especially if you've outsourced, test to see to make sure your outsource is actually catching stuff and notifying you, please.
Ooh, that's a good one. Good point. Number six, support training for APT hunters.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'll let you read that one. All right. Next up, we have, I wrote a really funny post. At least the title had a funny, the story had a funny title, you know. It was one weird trick to secure your PCs. Like all of the stupid spam, web spam banner ads, you know. One weird trick to lose weight or whatever.
One weird trick to make $1 million tomorrow.
There you go. Anyway, this is another Network World story. One tweak can make your Windows PC virtually invulnerable. Virtually. Mm-hmm. So there's actually been quite a lot of stories about this. There was a company called Avecto, I think that's how you say it, who did a report, and you know, you will be shocked to find that Avecto provides privilege management solutions. I know you're going to be shocked at that. But anyway, this report goes on to detail that if you were to remove or operate your Windows PC without administrative rights, 91% of the critical rated flaws or patches that Microsoft released last year would have been mitigated. So that's, you know, that's quite a number.
Yeah, that's huge. And this goes straight to the heart of what are your users willing to put up with and what is the culture of your company?
Yes.
And, you know, what are the help desk costs you're willing to incur? There's a huge amount of trade-offs here, but it's cool. It's something to consider.
Yeah, and again, I'm gonna whore myself out here because I wrote something about this, and I'll tell you about a little bit about it here. One of the problems is when you remove admin rights, you still have to do things as admin, or at least somebody does, right? And so at some point, you've got people, you know, usually a help desk function or something like that, logging into your system to do something, whether it's install software, perform some kind of troubleshooting for the employee, or whatever. The problem there is that if something does happen and that computer does get compromised, now you not only have the credentials of the employee, the normal user, but also of an administrative user cached on that system. And you know, it is not, I would say it's actually quite common when you look at, again, I am a twisted person. I find it very interesting to read the details of how these attacks work. And Active Directory and cache credentials are one of the main avenues that these attackers get around. And so you just have to think about that, right? It's, on the one hand, it's a really, really good mitigation to remove administrative rights. But on the other hand, you've got this challenge that if something does happen, it's conceivably going to be an enabler, right? And so there's potential mitigations, like how you design your permissions, right? So you don't want your help desk people to be domain admins. You don't want anybody who has a domain admin to be able to log on to a PC, you know, that kind of thing. So there's some mitigations, but they're more esoteric, and you really have to think them through because, you know, this, I would say Active Directory is the APT's best friend. And I don't mean APT in the Chinese sense of the word. I mean, you know, in all of the really high profile attacks we see now.
In defense of Active Directory, I think if you didn't have a unified permission and account management and privilege identity management system, you're going to have many, many more problems with dormant accounts, expired accounts that haven't been turned off, bad passwords, not being able to unify and change things. I think not having Active Directory causes many more problems. I think the pervasiveness of Active Directory is why you're seeing some of these sorts of attacks against it. And I think what this leads to is we need to do more research and study and promotion of ideas about how to securely run Active Directory.
Yeah, absolutely. And I apologize if I was coming off as saying you shouldn't use Active Directory.
Yes, you should apologize. You
all right.
Anti-Active Directory bigot.
Wow.
No, you didn't. But I just wanted to make the point clear that, at least from my opinion, and you're welcome, Jeroen, of course, someone may say, well, you know, we won't run Active Directory on key servers and such. And that comes with its own baggage that you have to think through.
Now, I will tell you, I strongly think that if there's anything we should learn from the likes of Target and lots of others, when you set up your environment, there's some things to do and some things not to do with how you configure Active Directory, right? Because if you've got, let's say in the hypothetical case of Target, right, a server sitting out on an extranet and it is authenticating against your corporate Active Directory and has the ability to then, you know, we kind of worm its way in through Active Directory and the normal Windows RPC protocols, you know, that's potentially not the best way to design it. So, you know, I'm a total believer in the directory services concept and being able to manage things at a central point, because I think there's a lot of benefit from that. But I think in general, what I'm seeing is they're not being implemented well. They're not,
sure.
They're not being designed with an understanding of how things can fail.
Agreed. 100%. And I think that applies to a lot of technologies as well. But specifically in this case, yeah, Active Directory, I think, is a good one. And a lot of people just set up just to work, right? They don't think about it from a security standpoint, and I think it behooves us to do that. But that's a tough one, right? You know, you're the security guy walking into the Windows AD guy and saying, I want you to change all your fours. What?
Sure, we'll get right on that, buddy.
No, it works. Don't touch it.
Do you know how many years it took to put that together?
Right, so... that's a tough one. You know, and that's why a lot of people just go to external commercial off-the-shelf packages to wrap around AD and try to manage some of that stuff and keep an eye on that stuff, which is not a bad option. But, you know, anyway, something to be thought about.
Absolutely. All right. The last story we've got here tonight is from Bloomberg News. And you probably have heard that Neiman Marcus was breached, and there's some details coming out now. Apparently Protiviti, and I think they're what's the name of it? It's the equivalent of a QSA who comes in after a PCI breach. I forget the acronym for it. But anyway, they released a 147-page report, I believe it was, on the breach. Now, apparently the author of this news story saw the report, but there isn't a copy of the report floating around, and believe me, I've looked. But there is some interesting details about this. So the headline of the story is that the hacker set off 60,000 alerts. And I got to tell you, that's not the most interesting thing in this story by far to me.
And also, for the record, it's a little hyperbole.
It is. We don't even know what kind of alerts.
Well, if you read between the lines, there's so many things I could say about this. But if you read between the lines, they say these 60,000 entries, which occurred over a 3.5-month period, would have been an average of about 1% or less of the daily entries on these endpoint protection logs, which have tens of thousands of entries every day. So this tells me this is coming from some sort of endpoint software that it probably hasn't been properly tuned. And they were ignoring it because of all the false positives.
Yes.
Right? And apparently the bad guys also renamed the malware to be just a typo off of known good software. So when people glanced at it, it looked so similar that they might have discounted it.
Yeah, yeah.
So another quote from the article, the company's centralized security system, which logged activity on its network, flagged anomalous behavior of malicious software programs that it didn't recognize the code itself as malicious or expunged, according to report. The system's ability to automatically block the suspicious activity it flagged was turned off because it would have hampered maintenance, such as patching security holes, the investigators noted.
Yeah, but you know what was a little maddening about this article is that in another place they say that the malware was being cleaned off and had to be reinstalled every day.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure how to reconcile that. But
well, what this tells me is that they had the data, they had the information, they had the infrastructure, and it wasn't being managed properly. So that might have been staff was overworked, not enough people, they'd lost confidence in this technology and were ignoring it. But if you don't keep up with the care and feeding of your security technology, it will atrophy and become less than useless. It will give you a false sense of security and not do its job.
Yeah, actively harmful, absolutely. Right.
So in this case, we don't know exactly everything, but I'm making a couple of assumptions here. I think the takeaway for other people is, you know, tune your software and tune your alerts down so that the alerts you get, you have the time and the staff to go actually look at.
Right.
And don't just ignore it. I mean, shame on them for just ignoring it for whatever reason. And, you know, at the same time, I get why they might have turned off blocking. This is an old debate. I'm wondering if this might have been some sort of endpoint whitelisting software, the way they describe it. But I'm not sure.
That was my read as well.
Which again, it comes down to how you manage it and deploy it. You can get around these patching problems with a properly deployed and managed whitelisting solution. So, you know, at the end of the day, this is maddening to me that they had the alerts and they had the information and they just missed it.
Yeah, and you know, I wonder how often that is the case. You know, and we always hear, oh, if we would have only known. But here's an example where, you know, they had the opportunity to know. What we don't know is the full context of why they didn't detect it, right? But, you know, we can impute that it was because of what you just mentioned. Now, there is another thing, actually two other things that I thought were really interesting. The theft of the card data started in July. However, the intrusion started in March.
Wow, they had a lot of time to poke around before they set anything up then.
4 months, right? This is not a smash and grab operation. And that's one thing I think we've really got to get our head around and stop being defeatist. I see a lot, you know, that I see a lot in this industry, you know, that the thinking is, this stuff happens so fast, we don't have a chance to react. You know, people can get in, steal your database through an SQLi call, and they're gone in 30 seconds, right? But here, this is 4 months that they were in. And I think a lot of the larger ones, you know, if you look at most of the larger breaches, it's the same story. They were in for weeks or months. I don't think we know on target yet. But I'm going to bet they were there for quite some time too. So, you know, I think this should serve as a, you know, not a warning, right? But an opportunity that being able to detect the stuff is very important and very valuable because it gives the opportunity to mitigate the damage. You know, if at some point in April or May or June, if somebody at Neiman Marcus had paid attention to an alert or saw something, we wouldn't be talking about this.
Yep.
It wouldn't have happened.
It's true.
So that's one of the lessons I took away. The other lesson I took away, and this goes back to, I think most every breach I see lately has this one common thing in common, and that is a server that bridged their point of sale network with an external network. And you know, they don't go into a lot of description about what the server was or wasn't or where it was, but they do point out that a server was breached and was used to bridge from the outside into the point of sale network. And, you know, this is another thing, kind of like Active Directory. I see happen a lot where when we design networks, we design them implicitly and unknowingly with the understanding that they're going to work, that things aren't going to fail. And so when something like this happens, we're shocked. You know, how could that happen? Well, you know, you've got a server that's, you know, essentially serving as an opportunity to bridge from one network into a really controlled, you know, separate network. So that's my rant.
No, I'm with you. Hey, before we go, I think there should be honorable mention of the Apple iOS and apparently Mac OS.
Oh, my gosh.
Yes. SSL verification bug. All I have to say is if you haven't patched, get ye to the patchery.
Or go to fail.
Yeah, it's bad. It's bad, bad, bad.
So did you read the code?
I can't read.
Well, sorry.
Yeah, didn't have like a double else fail in it.
Yeah, so it was some C code, and the way they had their you know, their if then statements is they weren't using braces, right? So if mm-hmm. you don't use braces, the, you know, the result of your if command basically only executes the next line. Well, they had copied and pasted the go to fail twice, and so it skipped. It basically totally skipped past the section that did the actual private key verification. And so it always assumed that the private key was verified. Now, what I find totally mind-boggling here is that the logic flowed like that.
Yeah.
You know, that if you didn't go into the key validation and then fail if it didn't work, or, you know, it that really was kind of mind-bending. But you know what was pretty cool was that was open source, and so
that's true.
So I mean, within like minutes, people had found the source and had were making new maymays on.
However, counter to Richard Stallman's religious belief system, nobody found it ahead of time by auditing the source code.
Yeah, fair point.
And, you know, if there was only some step in software development where we tested things, we assured perhaps, I don't know, the quality of certain routines, and I don't know, somebody tried this, maybe they would have caught it then.
Yeah, apparently it was in place since version 6, iOS 6, which was when the iPhone 5 came out, I think. So
yeah. It's been a long time.
Yeah. So a year and a half, I guess. 18 months.
Yep.
That's pretty special. Yeah. So like you said, get you to the patchery. Anyhow. Well, I think that takes us to the end of another lovely episode.
Chock full of stories.
Absolutely.
More stories, less commentary on this episode.
Yep. And, you know, if you like that, let us know. If you don't like that, let us know. Send us an email, info@defensivesecurity.org. And you can find links to all these stories and lots of other fun stuff at our website, www.defensivesecurity.org. You can follow Mr. Callett's hilarious antics on Twitter. At Lurg.
Oh, he's overselling it a bit there.
And you can find me at Malicious Link. You can follow the podcast at Defensive Sec. And with that, I bid you adieu. Have a wonderful week.
See you guys.